at the moon. Don't know or what I am. In your arms a while, face a baby before it knows to smile.
We're here, but there's no trace. Everywhere I turn, you kiss my face.
Namaste and blessings. Welcome to Meditative Living with Swami Sivananda Giri. One of the, I don't know, maybe others exist, but this Swami's not aware if they do. The only, to this Swami's knowledge, online radio program with a somewhat regular schedule where people can delve deeply into varying aspects of the attaining of enlightenment and liberation through the system we refer to as Mahadeva Mahayoga, under the direction of His Holiness Mahamandaleshwar Paramahamsa Swarupananda Vishwaguru Maharaj of Los Angeles, California, who in 2007 became the very first white-skinned American-born human to be invited into the rank of the 80 Mahamandaleshwars for this particular planet. Now, continuing on with our exploration of a text which came out almost a year ago now, called The Authoritative Guru Gita of H.H. Mahamandaleshwar Paramahamsa Swarupananda Vishwaguru Maharaj. This text is translated from the original Sanskrit by Acharya Padma Najendra, and you will be receiving through this program both the printed commentaries on the verses of the Guru Gita, as well as this Swami's additional pointings and explanations of whatever seems appropriate at the moment. Kindly understand, this is all about the Guru Path. If you are not the least bit interested in the Guru Path, perhaps better that you do not listen. so that confusions and doubts and anger and such do not arise within your mind related to this. For those of us who are in the Guru Path, there are many, many, many different levels of understanding, of experience, of ability to comprehend in an outward mind way, ability to carry out the sadhana, the practices. All of these things are in flux. None of it is rigid. There are certain times when certain things are appropriate for certain individuals, and other times when they are no longer necessary, when they can become a distraction, all of that. All of that is in play all the time. This Swami realizes that in the production of this series on meditative living at www.type1radio.com, it is of service to brand new people who don't know anything about this particular way. It is of service to those recently initiated and beginning their exploration of this way. It is also of service to individuals who are dedicated to this way and are moving on in that line. And it will serve in much the same way in time yet to come. So no sense commenting on that. But today, we rejoin the authoritative Guru Gita, which, as a brief intro, is a conversation between Shiva and his wife, Parvati, that took place when Shiva was giving the first group lessons of yoga, of meditation, on this earth. He was addressing the Saptarishis, the seven first students of his, when he appeared as the Adi Yogi or the Adi Guru, the first one to explain these things for the benefit of humanity. He explained a great deal of stuff to the Saptarishis, which then filtered out and became all kinds of different ways and situations and traditions and all of that stuff. Now, prior to the beginning of this conversation, Parvati, having been the wife of Shiva, was guided by him directly into her own state of enlightenment and liberation, which was not really heavy on discourse and explanations and details and possibilities and all that stuff, because that wasn't appropriate. What was appropriate for her was description of methods. She performed the methods. She got the results. That's that. And because of their intimacy as husband and wife, she wasn't inherently doubtful or suspicious or any of those things which can get in our way when we approach this sort of a thing. Okay? So, what's going on as the Guru Gita opens is Shiva is sitting giving discourse to the rishis, the Shapta rishis. Parvati notices that Shiva is bowing to someone, somewhere, but he's bowing. This is something she wasn't familiar with. And while the process had been, relatively easy for her. It still certainly had its difficulties. But it was not as long and drawn out and detail-oriented as what was being presented to these seven who were gathered around Shiva. So she goes, "Hey, you are all of it, even Vishnu and Brahma. The other three, the other two in the Hindu triumvirate bow to you, and all of the gods and demons and all the rest that's in creation bows to you. Who are you bowing to?" So, she asks him directly the question, "How does a human being become like you?" And Shiva's a bit taken aback. He says, "You know, nobody's ever asked me that before." He's been given discourse and various ways and methods and traditions, all that basic stuff, but in very small details. So he decides to satisfy her question with this conversation, which we now understand as the Guru Gita, the song of the Guru, which explains how the Guru functions, what a Guru is, and how one who approaches a Guru should behave, should not behave, what they should, shouldn't do, this, that, and the other thing. Okay? So, we are moving now into verse 101. And in last week's episode, you might recall that Shiva had moved into a more subtle discussion of even the word guru, bringing another layer of explanation into what guru is. So, let us continue with number 101. Shiva says to Parvati, "Even without knowledge, by simply being devoted to the guru, one can attain liberation. For one, with guru's grace, no other practice is required." The commentary. Previously cited the Ishvara Pratyabhijna Karika is one of the foundational works of the Pratyabhijna school of Kashmir Shaivism. In the preceding sloka, or verse, the Guru Gita aligns itself with the goal and the means of this new easy path. However, in this shloka, or verse, it elaborates an even more recent development. In which Shaiva philosophy, Shaiva yoga, and devotion to the Lord are all found at the feet of one's own living guru. Thus, the guru path, though remaining essentially unchanged from time immemorial, is the newer, easier path. Now, this is not to say that this is contrary to Pratyabhijna doctrine, just that the Guru Gita has streamlined the description of the very same practice. Verse 102, Shiva says, "That beyond which there is nothing at which the scriptures are pointing by saying, not this, not this, or neti neti, is the guru only. Therefore, the disciple should worship guru in thought, word, and deed. The commentary. While Kashmir Shaivism tells us that there is nothing that is not Shiva, aka Guru, and encourages this mode of self-inquiry, Advaita Vedanta takes the opposite approach. By encouraging the mode of inquiry that nothing of the phenomenal universe, nothing that can be grasped by the five senses, is ultimately real. All this is only Maya, or illusion, except for God in his Nirguna, or formless, aspect as Brahman, Paramashiva, or Guru Tattva. One can inquire into the nature of the big S self as either everything that exists, or alternatively, as being completely beyond everything that exists, or no thing. Each method is equally valid. Each has been proven efficacious by its fair share of the highest principle in existence or non-existence. The highest practice is to regard one's guru as the highest principle and to treat him or her as such. Number 103. Shiva says to Parvati, "It is only by the guru's grace that Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva have obtained their power to create, sustain, and destroy the universe." 104. Shiva continues, "Even the gods, many levels of celestial beings, ancestors, and various rishis, even Tumbaru himself, do not know the technique of worshiping the guru, so long as they regard themselves as anything other than the guru." The commentary. The specific beings that are referred to here are gods, or devas, the horse-headed, human-bodied celestial beings called the Kinaras, the celestial musicians, or Gandharvas, who are also described as having a humanoid body and the head of a horse, one's ancestors, spirits, and, as mentioned above, a specific being by the name of Tumbaru. People perhaps think that because these beings exist only on a more subtle plane, with the exception of the sage who has a physical form, Tumbaru, or because they are more powerful than human beings, it must necessarily follow that they are more spiritual or are privy to some wisdom that isn't available here in our more material realm. In truth, so long as the notion of I, as distinct from an other, persists, one is in bondage, even in the case of spirits, celestials, and gods. A sage should be free of this notion, but if this is not the case, he's not really a complete sage or rishi at all. We can trust that so long as this defect exists, such an individual does not know the technique of properly worshiping the guru. Conversely, all wisdom and all power are available to the one who does know and puts into practice the technique of properly worshiping the guru. The triumphant seeker becomes the guru. The guru is Shiva. The five powers of Shiva are omniscience, omnipotence, perfect completeness, freedom from natural law, and eternality. Ultimately, these are the inheritance of the successful seeker. Verses 105 and 106. Shiva says to Parvati, O Parvati, scholars of logic and grammar, priests, astrologers, and a great many others who are accomplished in worldly matters do not know the guru principle in its entirety. Because of great ego and arrogance born of their austerities and the power of their education, such people roam again and again across the wheel of rebirth, just like a lump of clay on a potter's wheel. The commentary. Shiva becomes Jiva, the individuated unit of consciousness. You can think soul at this point. By superimposing his power of limited knowledge upon his pre-existing omniscience. Discursive knowledge is intrinsic to the state of being an individual with its own existence apparently separate from Shiva. No matter how much intellectual knowledge a person crams into their head, their knowledge is incomplete until they know, capital T, that, which is the source and substratum of all appearances. Furthermore, resting content in one's accomplishments, considering oneself to be anything other than the Immaculate Supreme Consciousness Absolute, is an incubator for pride and hubris. That is not to say that one should not perform great works, but one should ideally offer these works to God and Guru, understanding that anything the individual is capable of accomplishing is only a partial manifestation of the glory of the same, that being God and Guru. It is only by this spirit of humble devotion that the miserable cycle of samsaric existence, birth, death, rebirth, death, rebirth, death, is broken, and the individual merges into the pure, blissful, all-pervading Shiva. Kindly allow this, Swami, to add. You also will come to a point where it is no longer appropriate to say or even think the words God and Guru, because they are not separate. They are the same, appearing separate, but not really. For some, it is appropriate to understand it as God and Guru. For others, it is not appropriate to use that particular language. And since our commentator here is trying to address the widest number of people possible, that was the terminology used. Verse 107, Shiva says to Parvati, neither those who perform sacrificial rites of various kinds, nor the yogis, by their austerities, can be liberated if they ignore the guru principle. The commentary. Even the practices that are specifically intended to promote self-realization cannot bear fruit so long as the individual does not recognize the truth that the Guru Tattva, or the Guru Principle, is Shiva. Is the personal guru, the living master one can work with, and is the big S self all at the same time, appearing to be separate things, but not really. Furthermore, it is the personal guru who, above all else, facilitates this realization. Allow this, Swami, to insert here. So many of us come to points of the path where our relationship as individuated students becomes stressed with the guru, the living guru. All kinds of possibilities for misunderstanding, for personality clashes, for all sorts of things exist and are likely to play out. So, from the guru point of view, they are very aware, okay, yep. If someone walks away, well, okay, fine. They're free to do that. And if they come back, they're welcomed with open arms and their lessons continue. If they do not, well, that's their choice too. And either way is just fine with the guru. They're not overly invested in any particular outcome. That's the freedom of guruing, is not even thinking these thoughts related to outcomes which have not yet come to pass. There are probabilities for outcomes. There are possibilities for outcomes. But what the outcome will actually be in this reality, any number of factors come into play in that. So, Sonic, let's go ahead and do the bottom of the hour break song. Stick around. We will touch verse 108 next on Meditative Living.
Shiva.
Namaste and blessings. Dramatic pause. Please understand. That in all the realms of possibilities, there are fewer probabilities and fewer actual outcomes and realities. Sometimes, when we are speaking to or about someone who holds a viewpoint that is different than our own, it could either be more restricted or more expanded or completely the same. Those three things always exist in this world. So, one of the problems each and every one of us that this Swami is aware of, whether it's from the words and writings of those who were alive in years gone by and wrote or said things, understand that before that individual could be called a master, recognized for knowledge, they were first a student. And they made lots and lots and lots of mistakes. Because that's just how it works. It's always worked that way. It's that way now, and it will always be that way. And we have the complete freedom to make our mistakes. Because otherwise, it's very difficult to learn at the deepest levels possible without the direct experience. Bet your nickel, you might be able to think of some aspect of your own individual existence right now, where you became aware of a pattern in your life that seemed to just happen again and again and again until you took whatever action was necessary to make that stop. That is also applicable from a higher perspective. Okay? But don't wig out about it. Opportunities abound. They always have, they always will. Verse 108. Shiva says to Parvati, celestial beings like the Yakashas, the Gandharvas, and the Karanas, the Rishis, the Siddhas, and even the gods do not obtain liberation if they neglect to serve the Guru. The commentary. Yakasha can refer to ghosts. It can more broadly refer to spirits. It can refer to demons as well. Gandharvas are a class of celestial musicians. When prompted to discuss the meaning of the word Karana, our translator, Padma Najendra, elaborated three different perspectives. First, she tells us that the root word, Kara, means movable. So one meaning of the word Karana is simply those who are mobile. She continues. Interestingly, I found another meaning for the word Karana. A kind or genus of butterfly. Now this makes sense to me, our writer here, because I read one of the books of Sylvia Brown, a psychic, where she says that she actually saw a little creature on a plant, either a leaf or a blade of grass, which had wings. She points out it was not an animal and it was not an insect. It also had an angel-like face, and it disappeared when she saw it. Padma, our translator, infers, based on these two insights and the context in which it is couched, that the Karana referred to herein could be a class of celestial beings who have butterfly-like bodies. Rishi literally means seer. The foundational scriptures of Sanatana Dharma, also known as Hinduism, the four Vedas, are attributed to seers of ancient India who brought these sublime hymns back to the world from their meditations. A siddha means perfected being, a being who has been purified of karma, erroneous mental conditioning, through the fire of yoga, is a siddha. Such a one uninterruptedly perceives, to paraphrase the Katha Upanishad, the self in all and all in the self. A rishi is inherently a siddha. A siddha, should he choose to see, is a rishi. These are both terms to denote one who has achieved the goal of embodied existence, which is to become liberated from it. The Guru Gita takes the opportunity here to outline the entire spectrum of embodied beings within manifest existence. Most are intrinsically subject to the delusion of I as distinct from an other. After all, it is only by Shiva's willing acceptance of limitation that anything may become manifest from him who is infinite but unmanifest potential. He is Sat Chit Ananda. Existence, consciousness, bliss only. He is consciousness absolute, pure, and unconditioned. Anything that thinks itself somehow distinct or separate is not liberated from this most fundamental and primordial of errors. Not ancestors, spirits, celestial beings, or even the gods. Even those who have achieved liberation, like the rishis and the siddhas, have only done so by the grace of the guru. Without guru's grace, none become perfected beings, and none become seers. Now, allow this Swami to add here. In our world today, due to the immediacy of information availability through the internet, we can run into all kinds of ways and people and all of that. Once upon a time, none of this was possible. But today it is. And while it is a blessing to have the information superhighway at our fingertips, there is also a curse that goes with that, in that it is very easy for people to misrepresent themselves for their own reasons, for people to misdirect people under order or for their own reasons. All of this exists. And it's all part of the play of consciousness. So it is very, very easy. Regardless how hopeful you are, regardless how well you think you control your educated mind, to be misdirected, to go down the wrong road to a place that ends up not really giving you much of anything. Many times problems or confusions or further doubt. Okay? Sometimes that's done on purpose. Sometimes it's not. But it's all out there. It's all out there. Returning to the commentary. Of Shiva's five functions, three have to do with the cyclical existence of the universe, creation, sustenance, and dissolution, while two dictate how the universe is perceived. That's concealment and grace. When the true nature of the universe is concealed, one thinks oneself separate from it. This is so by the will of Shiva himself. This is the way he is able to know his own manifold nature. This is the way he knows his nature. See? Under the influence of Shiva's power of concealment, one erroneously regards the universe as separate from oneself. Under the influence of Shiva's power of grace, one understands idam eva shivam, tvidam eva shivam. This too is Shiva. Indeed, this too is Shiva. One recognizes that truly the entire universe is oneself only. As the Shiva Sutras say, the Guru is the means. The Guru's principle itself is grace. The person acting in the capacity of the Guru is the grace-bestowing power of God. This person knows the truth of the matter, which is that he is the Guru Tattva. He or she knows that this body is the least part of what I am. A rishi is not a rishi without a guru. A siddha is not a siddha without a guru. Any legitimate jnani has cultivated the habit of guru seva. Service rendered to the guru is the way one attracts this grace. The guru is ever radiating grace, but if you show up with your cup already full, full of ideas, full of pride, full of desires, full of ambition, etc., well, then where's the room to receive any grace at all? Where would you put it? Humbly rendering service to Guru, your cup is empty. Little by little, a little pride is squashed here, a little bit of desire burns up over there, and you find some contentment where that once was. Unnecessary contents of the mind are emptied out and replaced with Guru. When the mind is filled with Guru, a heart full of Guru is not far off. When the heart is full of Guru, one cannot help but be showered with grace. Grace burns off the deluded notion of the limited self. At this point, only the big S self remains. The one who knows this is perfected, such a one is a Jivanmukta, liberated while still embodied. Here ends the conversation of Shiva and Parvati in the first chapter of the Uttarakhanda of the Skanda Purana. Moving now into chapter 2 of the authoritative Guru Gita. Verses 109 and 110. Shiva says, "O Parvati, listen to the method of meditation on the Guru, which bestows happiness and well-being to all. It also bestows all worldly happiness as well as liberation in the end. I speak to the Guru. I salute the Guru. I worship the Guru. And I remember the Guru, regarding him as the supreme Brahman only." The commentary. It is important to remember that it is Shiva who is speaking here. The Guru is Shiva, yet Shiva worships the Guru. He worships the Guru as the supreme Brahman, a.k.a. Paramashiva only. Paramashiva meaning beyond Shiva. Thus, the injunction, being Shiva, one should worship Shiva, is consummated. Furthermore, Shiva's every interaction with the Guru, whether thinking of the Guru, speaking to the Guru, or bowing to the Guru, is regarded as worship of Shiva. This is the most distilled answer to the question, what is the secret to happiness? This practice eliminates the erroneous notion of duality and reunites the individual with his or her own authentic nature as Shiva. Kindly allow this, Swami, to add here a bit about the form, the Adi Guru, the Adi Yogi, Shiva Shankar, who is carrying out this conversation with his wife Parvati. Now, Parvati already clearly understands she is far more than the physical form she's speaking through. And she also understands that the form she is speaking to as her husband Shiva is far more than can be understood or accessed through that particular form. In this, that's noted. This is why the Shiva Shankar, limited, embodied form, who is giving instructions and explanations to the Shapta Rishis and to Parvati regarding her question, that even that is a limitation of the unlimited eternal, source, God, Shiva, Brahman. The word you use isn't terribly important. But even he, as the embodied Adi Yogi, Adi Guru, first yogi, first guru, understood, well, because this is a form, then, you know, I got to do these things. And here's why. Verse 111, Shiva says, I salute the guru who is the bestower of the bliss of Brahman, who is one with knowledge, and who is pure and expansive like the sky. He is devoid of the three modifications of mind. He is the goal indicated by the Mahavakya. You are that, Tat Tvam Asi. He is the witness of all the functions of the intellect, unblemished and beyond emotions. The commentary. The Mahavakyas are considered the great sayings from the collected works known as the Upanishads. They are four. Number one, Prajnanam Brahma, which in English would be Brahman is consciousness. Two, Ayam Atma Brahma. In English, Atman is Brahman. Number three, Tat Tvam Asi. In English, thou art that. And number four, Aham Brahmasmi. In English, I am Brahman. Now, another thing we'll find in this world is a great number of people throwing these things around. You'll see people sign in their emails, you know, all that sort of thing. Yeah, okay. But just because one has become in some way or other attached to a certain Mahavakya or great saying does not in the least bit indicate they have mastered what that great saying means. Verse 112, we will get to next week on Meditative Living. Thank you ever so much for allowing this Swami to be of service. This Swami stands on the shoulders of giants in order to say anything about any of these things. And if that is forgotten even for a moment, it brings a lot of problems. So, we will see you next week here on type1radio.com. That's www.type1radio.com. Thank you, Sonic, over there in Brighton, England, pushing the buttons, making the music happen. Thank you for allowing this Swami to be of service wherever and whenever you may hear this. Om Namo Narayana.